Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1. With Olay Total Effects Age-Defying Day Cream. Over 100 awards without paying hundreds of euros.
First this morning, I've got a competition for two tickets to the incomparable Tom Jones. He's going to be live at the Botanic Gardens in Belfast on May the 31st, and then he's going to be live at the Marquee in Cork on the 2nd of June. Tickets will be on sale this Thursday from 9am on Ticketmaster.ie. But you could win a pair of tickets today by answering this incredibly difficult question. The Six Nations is about to begin, but which team will the very patriotic Tom Jones be supporting? Will it be A, Wales, B, England, or C, Italy? We'll text your name, your answer and your address to 51551, and I'm going to announce the winner at the end of today's show. We're going to start with some live music, and I'm privileged to be sitting in studio this morning with Enda Gallery, also known as Delush, Tolu Mackay, and five members of the African Gospel Choir, Tomi, Jessica, Kishi, Tosin and Dami. Thanks all so much for coming in. I've been privileged listening to you rehearse. So you're going to sing for us now and come back later and we'll have a chat. You're going to sing The Greatest Gift.
Of everything, connect me again to my heart, connect me with everything, angelic, psychedelic,
a feeling inside me, a love unconditional, feeling inside me, a love so powerful, feeling a love so total that the goodness is hard to bear.
This way.
Oh, that was beautiful. What a treat. The Greatest Gift by Delush and Utolo McKay and five members of the African Gospel Choir, Tommy, Jessica, Kishi, Tosin and Dami. You're going to go off and come back later. Thanks so much. And that song, The Greatest Gift, is available now. Thanks so much. We move on Friday, of course, we heard of the death of the great Seamus Mallon, one of the architects of peace on this island of ours. I had the pleasure and privilege of interviewing Seamus many times during his long career. Here's just a brief moment during a chat we had back in May 2017 when he joined me to talk on this show about his life and work.
There's only one thing you have recourse to, and that is hope. And that hope is for a better future. And to create a better future. And you know, we're great in this country at having remembrances. 1690, 1916, 1798, 12th of July. We're always great at remembering. Is it not time that we as a community, especially in the north of Ireland, started to be good progenitors? Mm. Where we would leave, instead of remembering the past, we would prepare a future in terms of social, economic and political terms for the children coming after us. And, you know, that's the challenge, I think, of the future. We can do all of the remembrances. They're easy. We all have the platitudes. It's very much more difficult to say, how are we going to leave this place when the good Lord takes us away from it? What have we done? Have we left it in good shape for those coming after us? And I think the answer to that, certainly in the north of Ireland, is that we have a long, long way to go.
Seamus Mallon there, who died on Friday. And our thoughts this morning, of course, are with his family. Kulasov Seamus. Well, it's hard to define the career of my next guest this morning, Pat Short, or what he means to us Irish audiences. But he is simply one of our finest and most popular actors, comedians and writers. Multi-talented, he's won many awards for his serious acting on stage, TV and film, as well as for his multiple comedy roles and characters. Well, he's now back with Hey, his latest live comedy show, which opens at the Olympia Theatre again on January the 30th. Good morning, Pat Short.
Good morning, Miriam.
Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Let's start talking about Hey. It's going to be at the Olympia Theatre again from, I think, January the 30th, the 31st and the 1st of February.
Yeah. Yeah, looking forward to it. It's the last run of the show. It's been running for a while now. So this is the last run. I'm back in the Olympia for, and I think the Friday and Saturday are sold out, and I think there's some tickets available on the Thursday night. But it's a beautiful theatre, the Olympia Theatre, to
beautiful,
go play. It's
yeah.
absolutely stunning. And you can stand on that stage. I did it many, many, many years ago with the Unbelievables, and I did Skull and Connemara there about 2 years ago or a year or so ago, summer ago. Mm. With Decadent Theatre Company, and that was when I kind of thought, gosh, I'd love to get back in here again. So I was talking to the lads that were there, and I brought, Hey was the first show I brought back again. It was supposed to be 25 years since I played. So we were there last year with the show, and it was brilliant, great crack. The show is a mix of characters, you know, that I would have the Gar characters. I kind of all new characters. It's hard to describe. You nearly have to go and see it. They go down into the audience, some of them, and it's like as if they know the audience. That's what I tend to do, is every show try and incorporate the audience as if they are the village that I am in. So it just makes it then that I know everyone like the back of my hand. And it's hard to explain. It's just, it kind of dictates the dialogue then, how you talk to people and the fun you have. You know what I mean? About
absolutely
very ordinary, everyday situations, just having to crack with it.
But does it have something to do with the beauty pageant, well, the Tipperary Tulip?
Yeah. Well, every show, this is the thing about show, God. Every show needs a thread, you know, something to link everything together with, so to kind of give it a narrative. Mm. But God, I think sometimes with shows like mine, it's a sketch show more so than anything. So the narrative can be very thin, But it's just a way of kind of pulling everything together and bringing all these characters under the one roof. In the past, I've done shows like that are based in a cinema. So then it's the cinema character going around and other people that turn up at the film. And then the audience become the audience at the cinema. And that's how it works. In this case, I've picked a beauty pageant. I suppose when you write comedy and stuff, you write about what you remember growing up as a kid and everything else. And there used to be a big beauty pageant in Turles at the time called the Queen of the Plough. When I was young, it was the Machrane Affirma beauty pageant. People might remember back to the 70s and that. And I always remember it as being there was a big dance there at the end of the weekend in the Premier Ballroom there with Gina Del Hayes and the Champions or someone like that, band of that ilk at the time. And it was a big event in the town. And the ladies just parade up the town in the back of tractors and trailers waving as recessionary. So I use that as the thread for the show, and I turned it into the Tipperary Tulip, where we pluck a tulip every night from the audience. And it's just a way, again, of having a bit of fun with it. You know?
You have a new podcast in which you're also putting characters. What is it called? The Wellness?
The Wellness Hour with Pear.
Yeah.
It's a nickname that I had as a kid, Pear. And my son and a few of the lads always slagged me off. Well, Pear, alum Pear. So I thought this is a great character, kind of like a DJ character to do with the podcast. And I suppose I wanted to, if I was doing a podcast, it's taken me a long time to get into it. The podcasts are around a long time now. And people really love them and listen to them a lot. You know, it's whether they're out for a walk in the car or whatever, it's like this on-demand type thing. I'm not explaining too much about podcasts, but anyway, it's kind of taken me a while to get into it. I didn't want to do interviews because people are better than me at that. So I thought do sketch, and I came up with this idea of a radio DJ who's doing this wellness hour. And the beauty of this wellness hour is it's a wellness hour, which is only 18 minutes long. So you have another 42 minutes to yourself when it's over, which is your wellness time. But anyway, if different characters come in, I've got I suppose it's like listening to Sean O'Rourke or something, or Pat Kenny. You got these contributors coming into the show. I've got a doctor, Dr. Fintan O'Brien from North Kerry A&E, who thinks people should be doing more procedures on themselves. And he carries on to do. I think you might have a clip of that, so I won't go into it too much. He carries on to do procedures on himself.
Let's listen to that now.
And that was when Dr. Fintan O'Brien proceeded to demonstrate the procedure on himself.
Well, first thing I'll do, if I go to a doctor, he'll numb up the area with an injection there, a bit of smile anaesthetic. I'd say the cheapest way to go around this now, you don't need any anaesthetic or anything. You ever get a slap of a holy? Yeah? And a stick, or your father hit you a wallop on the ass. By Jesus, you'll be ridden quick enough, you wouldn't feel much for about an hour. That's all you need, only about 5 minutes. Well, I'll tell her now. Best thing to do is the area, just see the area down the back of my leg there. That's where I'm going to start at it now. And what I'll do is, if we get this holy here now, just hit it a good flake. Oh, and just, it's a bit numb. It's not, I'm not fully there yet, so I'm going to... Oh, she's fairly numb. She's fairly sore now. One more, and I'd say that. Now, well, that cost me nothing.
Dr. Fenton.
He goes on to carry on. That's when he just started him getting ready for his procedure. And he does the procedure on himself live on radio, which on the podcast. So there's him, and there's other characters then. I have a vet character who proceeds to do everything just goes wrong for him. He has he does a piece on dealing with ponies in confined spaces and things like that, which, you know, so it's different characters doing different things. And he's talking about I've away in a home, which is a visit to a nursing home, to two old characters there, and we have chats with them, and we do various different challenges with them, like a pop radio would do a Zimmer frame challenge where they race each other to the toilet and things like that. So it's just full of madness and characters, and they just one into another, which is great. It's great fun.
And that's where we leave Matt and Shannon, but we'll be coming back to him next week in Away in a Home, where we have the Zimmer frame challenge where he'll race Pear Dial to the toilet. That could be an extended edition. From all of us here in Away in a Home, thank you.
Where do you get all your imagination from to create all these characters? Like, you'll have to probably start writing a new live show soon, will you?
Yeah, I think that's why I started doing the podcast, because I have a lot of projects on this summer, and I thought, God, it'd be, you know, I normally take a few months off to sit down and write the show and put it together, even though you could be thinking about it for a year, 12 months. So this time around, I know I'm going to be caught for time at the end of the year. So I thought if I do the podcast and develop these characters and write them, they might move them up to the stage. They will. There's various ways of putting them on the stage. People might be familiar with the characters if they're listening to the podcast and to be interested in going and see them live. There is a lot of writing involved, but it's fun. And I'm having a blast with it. I've always loved radio. I've always loved the medium of radio more than anything else. And I think the podcast is really delving into that. And I'm having fun with it. I'm working with a gang of students out of Limerick Institute of Technology, the art school department of it.
Great.
In the film and sound department. And I'm working in the studio with them a couple of days a week working on the podcast. And they've got the brains and the technical aspect to it. I just bring along the comedy. And it's a good mix and it's good fun. And they're a great team. So I'm very, very excited about the whole collaboration of it. A lot of times in the world of comedy and stand-up and that, you're on your own. So it's nice to work on film projects, TV projects, and something like this with a team of guys.
When people come up to you, Pat, not your serious parts now, like, you know, Josie and your serious film work, but which funny character do they tend to... I mean, do they talk about Tom and Father Ted, or is it Kilna Scully? What character do they tend to come up and talk to you about most?
It's funny. Morris Hickey's a big one. I did Morris Hickey for years on stage, and he wrote for the Farmer's Journal for nearly 10 years. So he's a great character that I used to love doing it.
Oh, Jesus, Willie, how you keeping? Oh, Lord, I'm delighted to see you out and about, Willie, huh? You're looking marvellous. Oh, Lord God, you're looking marvellous. You're over the worst of it, Willie, you are. Did you have a bad old knockout, hadn't you, huh? You had a bad old knockout, yes, Ryan. Oh, yes, you were very lucky, yeah. Did you come out to see Tommy Leonard, Willie? You did? I believe he's very good now. I believe he's very good. He's doing some old cut of a comedy routine or something to that effect here tonight. To be honest with you, Willie, I'm only down myself in a kind of a Northern Ireland official capacity, you know. Get up and say down a few words there and launch down night from that. But I believe he's very good. I'm saying I believe he's very good. You're right, God knows. After what you've been through, you poor old devil, we're lucky to have you at all, God knows. But sure, there were always great musicians in that house, weren't they, Willie, eh? Oh, the finest of musicians came out of that house, is right. You're Jesus. Sure, his mother, what's her name? Kitty Leonard, isn't that right? That's right. I'm right again. Oh, she was a flaking box player, Willie, wasn't she, huh? Oh, she was a master box player, will you stop? She just as many the good nights we had below in the Monk's Lounge to hear the pair of us. And we'd be sitting above at the bar there having a couple of quiet old pints. And in she'd come as quiet as a mouse. And next thing she'd sit down in the corner. And next thing she'd whip out her box. And she'd sit there playing away with it for the night. Isn't that right? Oh, many's the good night. We'll have them again, Willie. We'll have them again. Listen, I'm delighted to see you looking so well. You're over the worst of it. You're out the fair side. That's the main thing, Willie, God knows. That's the main thing. We're all delighted for you, Willie. God bless. I'll see you later on, yeah? Oh, jeez, he's gone very shook looking the boy. Oh, Jesus, that had frightened, you know, to see that. The poor, I don't think he even recognised me, the poor old creator.
It's funny when you're acting, performing comedy and stuff like that on stage, there's a manicness about what you're doing.
Yeah.
And you tend to kind of deliver it fast and paced. Morris Hickey was just a laid-back counsellor who was just slow. And you had to force yourself to slow right down with the audience. And it was amazing. It just really worked. And people just bought into the fact that sometimes he could stand there looking into the distance saying nothing. It was funny, you know, because it was his character and his way of doing it. The guard character is another character I do at the moment. And again, he's just, his complacency and laid back. And it's kind of a tough one. It's like they will always say any actor, what they hate is silence, you know, because it's that fear. But if you can get over that, and then it's actually fun to play with an audience with silence and stuff like that. And that's the stuff I like doing. And a lot of people come up to me and talk about those characters because they stand out like that.
Do you remember Pat Maloney at all? You would, of course. Lovely man. Pat is great. Pat, you would remember him very well, of course. Yeah. You were as tight as that in the two of you, weren't you? Yeah. He held together in Everton. Yeah, yeah. No, Pat, I got his daughter, Christina. Oh, Mother of God Almighty. Oh, I got her. And I was delighted at first, you know. So I was below in the barracks when she came down. I said, I'd be there to greet her. You know, but it's only the two of us below, sure. She came down anyway. I said, Christina, I'm delighted you're here. I said, there's just the two of us here now. I said, and I'm delighted now to have you. I knew your father well. I said, I trained with him, a lovely man. Give him my regards when you get home. I said, and another bit of history now, Christina. I said,
I think you're the first Ben-Gard to be stationed here in the barracks with me. Oh, jeez, you reared up on me. I'm not a Ben-Gard. I'm a Gard the same as you're a Gard. I'm equal, you're equal. We're all Gards. There's no such thing as a Ben-Gard. We're all Gards now. I said, jeez, I'm sorry, Pet. I didn't mean to upset you at all. Jeez, if I did, she was twice as bad now. She roared. I couldn't make out a word she was saying. She roared. I said, Christina, calm down. Calm down. Calm down. Calm down. I said, it's your first day in the barracks now. You're a little bit excited. I said, that's understandable. I said, you know what you do now? I said, go in there and put the kettle on. I make a nice cup of tea for the two of us. Like a good girl. I'm afraid to go down on my own, Seamus. That's as simple as that now. I'll tell you now, Seamus, I'll tell you something for nothing now. You got out at the right time.
Where did it come from? Your dad is still alive, isn't he?
Christy is, yeah, very much so. Probably listening to us now.
And he was the school headmaster?
He was in Mind Temple too, yeah. He was a school headmaster, but he was a great musician.
Mm.
Not so much, he still is a great musician. He used to play the fiddle a lot, but the arthritis kind of affected that.
Mm.
So he took up the tin whistle then a couple of years ago, and he's just a beautiful whistle player now. I mean, I'm very much in awe of his playing and his ability to just to perfect the instrument. But he was always like that, with whether it be with languages. He's into languages as well, and music and everything else. And but he was a great musician. And that's kind of where I got my influences from with music
with
and everything.
Yeah. And the comic?
I don't
talent.
Know.
Where did that come from?
Well, this is the funny. He's a funny character as well. Probably
your dad.
From my dad, yeah.
Yeah.
When he was in college, he was in college with Sean O'Shea. You know Sean, the singer?
Yeah, we interviewed him last week, actually, with Heather Arreda.
Yeah. And he was in college with my daddy, and every time I meet Sean at various events, he's always asking for Christy. And he told me one day, he said, sure, you can see where you're getting the humour from. And I said, well, what do you mean, Sean? He said, but sure, your father is a great comedian. And I said, was he? I didn't know. He said when they were in college as students, he used to write all the funny sketches for their concerts they have throughout the year. And I didn't know that. I wasn't aware of it. So I'm not surprised at all, because he is a character. So I presume I would have got a lot of the comic from that. But also, growing up in a big family, I think it does bring out its comic moments.
Yeah. How many again in your family, Pat?
12 in the family in total. 11 in my family. My dad married again, and I have stepsister Catherine. So there's 12 in total. But
where did you come in that order?
There was about 5 younger than me, I think.
Yeah, you remember?
Well, you don't think about it. You'll be going, If I was,
could you name them all?
I could, of course. I was just saying, it'd be dead radio time. Me going, where was I? One second.
Go, start.
Well, the youngest is Catherine, obviously, and then William, and Peter and Paul, the twins, and then me. Oh, yeah, that's me. Patrick said, there's the 5. And then Joe, and then Chris, Edward, Mary Alice, and Thomas.
Right.
Yeah, so that's it. That was a bit of a struggle, Miriam. I haven't done that in years.
Well, you did it well. I'm very impressed. But I know you've spoken before about, because you were only 7, I think. Your mum died, obviously, of cancer when you were all very young.
We were all young, yeah. I think the eldest was 16. I think the youngest was 4. So, and we were all quite close together. So there was that was tragic enough at the time.
Mm. Do you remember anything about it?
Not really, no. Not a whole lot, because I was only about 7 at the time, and yes, I have memories of it all, but it's a very young age, and you take in a very different thing, and you're distracted by playing with things and stuff like that. Do you know what I mean? So you don't really take much notice of what's going on. Just too young, really. You know, it's later on when you become a teenager and that you start questioning various reasons of why you didn't have a mother and wanting another, but of course you did have a mother, but not in the same extent as your friends and all the rest. So it gets a bit more difficult then, I think. You question things the older you get, you know what I mean? And I suppose what you do question a lot too is your faith and stuff like that, you know what I mean? You know, religion and why and what is it all about? You know, if life can be so cruel or whatever, you know.
Mm. like why a woman with so many young children should have her life stolen from her, basically. Yeah.
And I remember the phrase I used to always find very strange was God has taken someone, you know. Mm. And you're kind of going, not at all, he hasn't, you know. If he has, he's a cruel person, a cruel individual. You know what I mean? Because it's not the right person to take or whatever. So I used to find those phrases very awkward and couldn't understand them. You know, I think it was of that generation too, the 70s, 80s. We were coming out of that Catholic dominance, and you weren't. I think maybe a different generation would have accepted it more. I think our generation were starting not to accept those things and those approaches to things, you know, and move on.
And I suppose also I've interviewed other people, quite a number of remarkably successful people who've lost one or, you know, mother or father when they're very young, and they often say, it's not until they're much older that they actually grieve for them. Because I suppose when you're young, you're just surviving, you're just carrying on because you think that's just the way life is.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that you do and you survive. There's a survival instinct kicks in with you as well. I do know we were all very close as children because we all looked after each other and looked out for each other. And you just get on with things. Do you know, there is that element of it too. And maybe that was of the times too in the 70s and that, you know, where you got on with things. Kids weren't listened to as much. There wasn't, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Nowadays, I think there would be more awareness of a child's grief and loss and everything else. I think back in those days, it was just taken. They didn't know any better. Rock on and move on with your life. And I think maybe that's why people older later on then grieved a bit, because they began to realise you never got to resolve anything, or questions weren't answered for you about why things were happening. And when you're very young, you do question things a lot, you know. So I think that's why it all hits you later on, which I think it did with me later on. I think it did, you know.
When you had your own children?
Well, I certainly, with my own kids, I didn't. I became aware that it was how important a mother is. It might sound like a most stupid thing to be saying here now, but when you grow up without a mother in the house, and then you start seeing your wife, your partner, whatever, being a mother, and how much a kid really clings to their mother, and all those things, you suddenly then begin to realise, gosh, that was all vacant in my life, you know what I mean, to a degree. Not that I had a hard life or anything, you know, but these are things that you just missed. And they're suddenly starting to dawn on you much older in life. And, it, you know, you're able to cope with it, but it does hit you a bit, I suppose. Yeah.
How did you go into comedy in the first place?
Well, I started, I got to know John Kenny was really how it happened. And I got to know John as a musician. I started playing with John. John's an amazing singer and musician. And
great guy.
We met together, through music, really, and having the crack. And I start playing, let's say, I used to do tune. So John used to sing the song Summertime, which was the old Cole Porter tune. And I used to play the saxophone. Beautiful song. He's amazing voice, and it was great. And then it went from me just jumping up playing it to suddenly finding myself in my underpants on stage playing the saxophone, him in his underpants spitting water out. And we're doing this sketch about two fellas on a beach and in rural Ireland, you know. And it went from there to madness and crack. And we were writing comedy sketches for the two of us and having fun. And then I ended up doing sound and lights with John and jumping up and down the stage. And then the comedy just started developing, and the characters, and mixing that County Limerick and County Tipperary thing that we had going on. And
Which
became the Unbelievables eventually, yeah. And that's kind of, it might have been, we were probably doing that for 4 years, you know, before we actually formed. It wasn't the Unbelievables, actually, it was just John Kenny and Pat Short.
Yeah.
We did two characters called the Unbelievables, and people loved them, two musicians.
Yeah.
And people kept saying, did you see the Unbelievables? And John Kenny and Pat Short disappeared. You know what I mean? So we made a decision, said, look, we just call ourselves the Unbelievables because that's what people referred to us as.
Yeah.
And we started calling ourselves the Unbelievables then. And every show was the Unbelievables, even though the two characters had gone. Myself and John had taken on their persona. So yeah, I got into comedy with John and having the crack, but I was always a kind of comic streak in me and the way I look at things and everything else. So it was just, I really felt at home doing that and having fun with it and crack. And I can see it in my own daughter now. She's acting and she's very, very funny individual and natural. And she just has this way of looking at things really, really funny. And I find it hilarious listening to her because she's just hilarious. Very talented girl, but it's just, I can see where it's all coming again. Full circle, you know.
Do you warn her at all about?
Oh God, no. I mean, I know people have this thing about your daughter getting into the world that you're in, theatre or whatever, but it's been very good to me.
Yeah.
And there's no reason why it can't be good to her, you know, and she'll enjoy it.
Did you have a favourite unbelievable sketch? You know, like, because people often like say they just love it, but if we were to play one clip from the two of you.
I think the sweet shop sketches, two of them. And it was a great sketch. We ad-libbed this whole piece.
Did you?
Yeah, it was the whole.
So you didn't write it before?
No, didn't write it at all. And that just happened like that. And I think it was at a time when me and John were really on our game together. And yeah. There's a thing about two people working together, timing, and it takes years to get that right. And an understanding of pauses and the other person, you know what I mean? And that was a prime example of, and that to me was one of the we did loads of brilliant stuff, but that was to me was like the funniest.
Hello, Mr. Larkin.
Well, what do you want? Come on, Jerry. Come on, come on, come on, come on, come on, come on.
How much are they?
Which are they? These here?
Yeah.
There are three of them for a penny. Will I get you three of them?
No. How much are they?
Which are they now?
They.
These here?
Yeah.
They're a penny each.
And how much are they?
Which are they now? The pops?
No, I know.
Or these here?
Yeah.
They're a penny each as well.
And how much are they?
The teeth?
Yeah.
You can get two teeth for a penny.
How much are two of them and two of them?
Two of these, is it?
No, two of them.
Two of them?
Yeah.
Two of them. That's 10 pence for two of them, right?
Yeah.
And you can get two of them for a penny. So that's 11 pence for two of them and for two of them.
And how much are they behind?
They're a penny each behind. They're a penny, right?
Yeah.
They're a penny. Okay, look, they're a penny. They're three for a penny. They're a penny. They're two for a penny. And the pops are 5 pence. Them pops are 5 pence there. They're 5 pence. How much you got, Jenny? How much have you got? Johnny, look, you have 20 and you have 2, and that's a penny, right? That's a penny. So that's 22 and 1 is 23. You have 23 pence there.
And how much are they?
There's 3 of them for a penny. You can get 3 of them for a penny. What, Jesus, will you make your mind up?
How much are they?
There what? What are you pointing at?
Them ones there.
Them there?
Yeah.
Is that what you... Them there? Yeah. There's two. You get 2 of them for a penny. For 2 of them for 10 pence. They're 10 pence each.
And can I get 2 of them and 2 of them?
2 of them and 2 of them. No, they're 10 pence each and they're 5 pence each.
And can I get 2 of them and 2 of them?
You can, yeah. You can get 2 of them and you can get 3 of them.
Yeah.
You can, yeah.
And them?
Yeah, you can get 2 of them and you can get 3 of them as well. You can get 6 of them.
And them?
No, you can't get them. They're a penny each.
And what about those?
No, you... Yeah, all right, you can have them. Yeah, 2 of them and 2 of them. Or 2 of them.
Can I get 2 of them and 2 of them?
What, Tim? What 2 of them now? Two of these or 2 of the pops?
No. One of them and 2 of them.
No, you can't get one of them and 2 of them. But you can get 2 of them and you can get 1 of them. And you can get 3 of them.
How much have I?
Johnny, come on, what do you want?
Give me
right,
two of them.
Come on, here.
I'm one of them.
Come on, now, look, there's two of them, right?
I'm one of them.
What do you want? You get the 3 of them, right?
Yeah.
Okay, now, there you go. Now, there, show me the money. Come on, now, come on, out. Come on, out.
Can I change one of them?
Get out, come on, out of it. Come on, for fix here. Come on, just...
And it's funny, I did a gig in Australia in the theatre out there. And there was a promoter came up to me in the interval. He says, you should go down to the front box office. There's a merchandise stall there with pant short hats and pencils and biros or whatever it was they had, the T-shirts and everything else. And there was about 300 or 400 Irish people all standing around with drinks in their hand and one fella going, how much is one of them and two of them and one of them? And the poor girl was Australian behind the counter. She had no idea. She was going, that's $20 and $20. And if I was to take 2 of them and 1 of them. And he was doing the whole sketch from that
and
video.
I just remembered it, which is amazing.
Yeah.
But the two of you went on to super successful careers. John was on here a few weeks ago, actually, doing great. Would you ever get back together again for a one-off?
I don't know. Yeah. We did 10 years ago. And it's hard to believe it's 10 years now. We did a tour with One Hell of a Do again, a reunion tour. And it was great fun. We had a blast. It lasted about a year, the tour. So it wasn't a short stint by any means. And it was great fun. I loved it. But I suppose you've done that now, you know, and you want to move on to the next thing and the next thing, the next thing.
Yeah.
You know, and I've great memories of working with The Unbelievers. Absolutely fantastic and some of the greatest shows and crack and fun of my life. But then you move on and do different things.
Kilmascully was huge as well.
Yeah, that was massive.
How many years did you do that for?
About 6 or 7 years of it.
Yeah.
It's hard to believe when you think of the numbers it was doing at the time. It was
massive.
800,000 a week kind of numbers. Yeah. 700,000. We did over 1 million on one Christmas special, which was unheard of in the entertainment section of RTÉ. So it was great. I think the first pilot we did was 749 or 50,000 viewers.
Incredible.
It was massive. But it was a huge, huge project for me. I mean, I was writing it with two other writers and... We'd end up finishing the scripts and working with RTÉ closely on edit of them, and then it would go into production in April, May. We'd have all the pre-production people down building sets and getting locations ready and all that. Then the shoot would happen, and it would maybe about 2 months, 2.5 months with a full cast crew, but you know, massive operation. And then that would finish and be me and the editors and the director working away at the edit at the end for the last bit, the sound and picture. We'd deliver to RTÉ by August and then we'd start writing again. So in between that I was doing a couple of films and live tour as well at the same time. So
it just took up your whole life.
It was nearly 10 years between that and Matty, another project. It took up every minute of my days for about 10 years, and I'll never forget when it finished. I was never so happy.
Yeah, just a relief.
Yeah, I didn't realise how much I was working like mad. I enjoyed it, but it was draining, physically and mentally draining. And there was 10 years there that I don't know where they went.
I know we're not going to talk about them in detail, but you're doing a number of big acting projects this year, hopefully.
Yeah.
Do you love and have obviously been widely praised for doing the serious acting roles as well as the humour. Do you love to keep doing those? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's look, I'm very lucky. Very fortunate to be getting the roles, you know. I mean, I because there's so many great talented actors out there, and I'm very lucky. I just there's a couple of directors and writers out there that like what I do, and they keep asking me to do stuff. This year, I have about two or three projects that are happening, and they're all in kind of the pipeline at the moment, and juggling them and everything else. And I do love doing them because, as I say, I love doing comedy, I love touring, and I love getting on the stage and having fun with the audience. But it's, you know, then you go into a film, it's a big collaborative thing, you're working with really talented people, and it's all a different way of looking at things. It's a different medium. It's so exciting. It really, really is. So I'm delighted to be working on a couple of big projects later this year, and it's going to be very, very exciting to look forward.
You've worked with the McDonoughs a lot, haven't you? The two talented brothers, gosh.
Martin and John Michael McDonough, they are great. They really are talented people, you know. I mean, any opportunity to get to work with them is fantastic. And I was lucky to do a few films with John Michael. And then I did The Cripple of Inish Man on Broadway in the West End with Martin, you know. So that was fantastic, you know, working out in New York for months and on the main stage. Daniel Radcliffe was working on it as well. And it was, you know, Sarah Green. It was a great, great Irish cast in it, fantastic Irish cast, and it was great. We spent 2 years nearly working on that together, which was amazing.
And Josie and Garage, I mean, I still go back to that. That was a remarkable role.
Yeah.
Was that a very important moment in your own career?
Yeah, it's funny enough, it was. But it's funny, like, it was. I often tell you know, it was a bit like doing Father Ted. You know, now everyone's like, "God, you did Tom and Father Ted." And when we did it, it was a small shoot, very low budget, nobody around, and no buzz about it. And that's the way the business is. And with Lenny Abramson on Garage, it was a very small shoot, minimal lighting. He used natural lighting. Peter Robinson on camera, like, he was an amazing cameraman, and I remember being almost like a student shoot. It was very exciting. Something about Lenny, he was very exciting. Peter on camera, everyone was really looking for something. It was very, very exciting working on it, and the acting and the script was amazing, you know. So it was great, but it was a low budget. We were in a bog, you know.
you know, down in Offaly. So it was no glamour. There was not, it's, you know, it was just a low budget Irish film, but it was fun and it was nice.
What did she die of, anyways?
Boredom, probably.
Right.
No, it was total body cancer. She was riddled.
You should have been a doctor, Josie.
I should.
How are things above?
Good now, good.
Tell us, what's new in Patrick?
Is he?
Really?
We're going late at the weekends now. Picking up.
Go away.
Aye.
They mentioned something about it on Sky News, all right.
People passing by anyways and we decided.
Fuck it, you.
Exactly. Houses flying up around the lake and we decided.
Can I just ask you one thing, Josie?
What?
Who's we?
Al?
No, but I was just wondering, like, I didn't realise you had a stake in the business. We?
Mr. Gallagher.
Ah, that's better. That we.
Yeah. True enough.
All right, Freshney, Josie, pint there, Val. All right for a pint, Bon?
You're fine.
You nearly missed it, Sully.
I'd say I did not. Huh?
Josie was giving us his 5-year plan.
Fuck's sake.
Morning to you, Josie.
Just.
Now. Tell him, Josie.
Way now to crack.
What?
We're opening late above the weekends. Just Thursdays, Fridays, Saturdays.
And it wasn't until we were in the sound mix that I remember coming to Dublin to do ADR, which is additional dialogue recording. And before I went in, Lenny said to pull me aside and said, look, the film's getting great traction abroad and people are really interested. And I thought, oh, yeah, that's great. And he said, well, we might be going to Cannes with it. And I thought,
yeah.
Jesus, go ahead. That's, you know, the film in the bog in Rora. So, yeah, and he said, your performance is great in it and he's getting a lot of people talking about it. And I thought, Jesus, it's great. But, you know, it's... And then suddenly you're out in Cannes and you're starting to get the vibe that this is more than just an interest in a film. People are really talking about it and they're very excited about it. And that was only when it started to hit me that, Jesus, this is and great. Then it trickled, you know, with the IFTAs and all sorts of things happening. That it was, and you begin to realise it was a really, really good film, yeah. It still is, yeah, great.
It's a fascinating juxtaposition for you, though, because, you know, most of your life, you're funny, you're creating these hilarious characters, and yet you feel very comfortable also with the darkness in Irish life. I suppose the kind of people written by McGahern or Martin McDonagh, you feel comfortable with those characters as well.
Yeah, I think if you want to get real comedy and humour out of something, you've got to have that balance of dark and you've got to bring the darkness in there as well, and that shows the hilarity in things. That's what the genius of McDonagh is. I remember the first time seeing Cripple of Inish Man in London in the Theatre Royal, and I just absolutely blown away how someone could be talking about cripples and the un-PC-ness of it. But that brought out the humour in the other parts of the play, and it was, you know, and other things as well, not just the cripple, but, you know, it was like it just, the darkness was brilliant and the comedy is brilliant. And I don't know, I suppose we'd be kind of doing it with Dumbelievers down through the years as well, looking at the darkness of certain characters, bring out the humour and other things, the destitute of people that is hilariously funny and stuff like that, you know. So it you do need the two to marry.
You love what you do though, don't you?
Oh God, yeah, absolutely.
Do you feel lucky at this stage in your life?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, working on the podcast, I got so excited like a child in the recording studio. And I did check myself and I said, oh geez, this must be good because I'm really enjoying it. You know what I mean? And it's great when you spend hours doing something that you just, it flies past and you're just absolutely excited about it, and it's great.
And as we close talking about Hay, when that show's about to start now again on January the 30th, 31st and the 1st of February in the Olympia, tickets from Ticketmaster.ie, do you have a routine? Do you have like a way you go about the day before you go on stage or not?
It's a strange one. Any actor will tell you when you're doing a show, your day is doesn't exist because you can't do anything, can't go anywhere, you can't relax, whatever. You're there just for the show that night. So I always go to the theatre early. I like to be in around the theatre. When I'm on tour with the boys, I like to travel with the crew if I can and help them load in and do the check with the computers and the programming and all that kind of stuff, you know. So in the Olympia, I'll go in there around 6 o'clock and I'll sit down and have a cup of tea, walk around the stage and just talk to the crew and have a bit of fun and then listen to the doors open and the crowd pouring in and get the vibe going and then get up on the stage. And that's kind of how you do it. Check everything in, all your costumes and go through everything.
Mentioning your crew there reminds me of a story about the coffin.
Oh, yeah.
Do you want to tell that before we go?
Well, it's a funny one because I used to do a show. I think we're talking about this in the context of, you know you're doing something right when you're afraid of your life of it. You know, I did a show with Safi and I used to do a kind of a funeral scene where I'd bring fellas up and they'd have to carry the coffin out of the venue. And there was one time we were doing the show in Wexford and we went to the van and there was no coffin. I thought, Jesus, lads, how can you forget a coffin? And they did. They left it behind in Sligo. So we had to go, fair play to one of the lads, he had to go up to a funeral home up the road and borrow a real coffin. We had a prop coffin, which was light, but a real one is a different story altogether. I'll never forget the show. I was full sure the lid was going to fly off into the audience on top of someone's head and the poor fellas carrying it down. Oh my God, it was heavy. You know? So, but yeah, there's always craziness like that on the road.
Always fun though.
Yeah.
Pat Jordan, it was a privilege as ever to chat to you this morning. And hey, it's on the Olympia Theatre, January the 30th, 31st and the 1st of February. Tickets from ticketmaster.ie. And your podcast is called?
The Wellness Hour with Pat, which is out on the 4th of February.
Great. We'll all be listening. Pat Short, thanks so much as ever.
Lots of lovely reaction to Pat Short. No time to read it because I've been welcomed back into studio here by Tolu McKay and Enda Gallery, also known as Delush, and five members of the African Gospel Choir. Tommy, Jessica, Keisha, Tosin and Dami, thanks so much for all being here. You sang beautifully earlier. Very briefly, tell me, Enda, how come you and Tolu got together? You write both of these songs we're hearing today.
Yeah. So I wrote the song that you heard earlier in 2018, and I had kind of forgotten about it for a while. And last January, I went to Morocco and I did a Vipassana, which is 10 days silent meditation. And it's very, very intense. There's no reading or writing or anything like that. But on the fourth day, I had a fully conscious dream. And so it picked me out of the bed and I was flying in the dream, but I knew it was happening. So it flew me through the sky and into a cathedral, and this song was playing. And it showed me that it wasn't me singing it, it was somebody else. And I couldn't make who it was, but I could hear her voice and I could hear there was a gospel choir and it sounded really amazing. It was just, I felt very ecstatic. And so I couldn't even write down this. I just had to keep it in mind, you know. And then afterwards, I wrote to a friend of mine, John Barker, who does a show of just Irish artists on 98FM. And I told him, I didn't tell him in full about the dream at that point, but I told him pretty much what I was looking for, and he sent me five or six people, and I knew when I heard Tolu that it was her.
Yeah, beautiful voice, yeah. Tolu. And that song you sang earlier, The Greatest Gift, it's on all platforms, and there's a lovely YouTube video as well of Tolu singing.
Exactly.
And you're going to sing us out today with another of your songs, Slow Your Attention.
It's from my upcoming album that comes out on April 24th.
Yeah. Brilliant. And you've in the EP coming
I'm working
out
on an EP during summer.
Brilliant. Yes. Well, thank you all very much for coming in. Just to say, the winner of our Tom Jones tickets, Geraldine Semple, Rathfarnham, Dublin 16. My thanks to Mark Dwyer and Sound, Denise Davies, our BCO, Shannon Gorm produced. And take it away, Enda Tolu and the African Gospel Choir.
Guess I knew from the start of it that I got to the heart of you. Oh, guess we kind of all started it. Honesty can put too much on show. Although I know myself, I can't help how the chemicals flow. Without danger, how it turns, the fire burns low. So slow your attention my way. You know you've got to keep my ignition warm. You know you've got to keep it together. Keep it together, for we let this fall apart.
Fight in us, cause there's so much right in us. Oh, guess we kind of all started it. Guess we needed the time to grow. Somehow we need the pain, somehow we need the games to appreciate it, to appreciate it. So slow your attention my way. You know you've got to keep my ignition.
slow your attention my way. You know you've got to keep my ignition warm. You know you've got to keep it together. Keep it together, for we let